Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I'm an idiot. I passed up a chance to make some serious coin when my kids were young. I mean, before they were old enough to actually sing real songs to at bedtime, I would make up these silly little tunes, almost like jingles, really, for all the routine parts of having a toddler. Gotta shampoo the baby, get him to eat, change their socks. Man, I was composing all day. I had songs for all of that. What I didn't realize is that apparently there's a market for that. And in a little while, you'll meet the two enterprising founders of Pear Music, who will create a short piece of classical music specifically for your baby for a cool $900. It ain't cheap, but then you can think of it as the modern version of commissioning an artist to paint your family portrait. Also on the program, classical guitarist Ben Verdery will play classics by Bach, Prince, and a Randy Newman arrangement that's truly a thing of beauty. But speaking of arrangements and Randy Newman,
you kindness overflowing. And I think it's going to rain today.
This early song by Randy Newman sports a typically effective arrangement by Van Dyke Parks. That's the same Van Dyke Parks who co-wrote the songs on the Beach Boys album Smile, the most famous unreleased album of all time. The same Van Dyke Parks who has arranged songs for everyone from Walt Disney's Jungle Book to indie rock harpist Joanna Newsom to dubstep hero Skrillex. Now, Van Dyke Parks has released his first album of original material in 20 years. It's called Songs Cycled. Van Dyke, welcome to Soundcheck.
Nice of you to have me.
So, from Song Cycle, your 1968 record, we now have Songs Cycled. And I suppose I could ask the same question about both of these records. Are these genuinely song cycles? Do you see them that way?
Well, I have no idea what a song cycle is. When I was a child, I became acquainted with the term song cycle. I loved the music of Schubert and Hugo Wolf and great songwriters, and I've always been fascinated with the song form. It's my favorite escapism.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of song cycles, I mean, yes, people think of the classical song cycles, Schubert's Die Winterreise, yeah. Or you might think of those Frank Sinatra records of the mid-50s, Only the Lonely, for example, as a song cycle.
That's true enough. But I think that what distinguishes a song cycle is an oeuvre that comes out of an era of experience, a most personal experience. It falls right in the category of write what you know. Mm. And my albums all tend to do that. They are products of my environment. They are reactions to where I am and who I love. This is no exception. Songs Cycled is very as much personal as mm-hmm. as the first one, but I have heard that it is less opaque, and for that I'm very if that means that people will listen to it and feel invited and consoled, that's my aim.
Mm-hmm. So Songs Cycled is the latest from Van Dyke Parks. Song Cycle was the 1968 debut, and in addition to the echoing in the title, there seem to be moments throughout this record that are almost like in conversation with that long-ago version of you.
Yes, but there's a difference. I think Songs Cycled is, it's undeniably an experience that salutes, I think, or is focused on, a, a world that is a handshake away, one that we have just left. And it also, in its darkening, and it is a darkened album, but for the cheerful, the candy-coated
arrangements.
Cosmetic. Well, the arrangements, thank you very much, because that's what I do for a living, I arrange.
So even in songs like Dreaming of Paris, which, you know, seems like a kind of nostalgic, sepia-toned tune, there are, you know, references to things that would have been very much in the news back when you did the first record in 1968, Martin Luther King.
Well, exactly, exactly. I was with my wife, who had had a shop in the flea market for 6 years in Paris, and she expatriated when Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy were shot. That was back there in,
68.
And that was... And this was the first time she was returning to Paris proper, and since that time. But the same violence, that is, another war had begun, because the night that we got on that plane to Paris, I was doing a concert at the Louvre. The night we got on that plane, George W. Bush was dropping bombs to get some weapons of mass destruction at the cradle of civilization. And this is what the song is about, that the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Let's hear some of the song, Dreaming of Paris, from the album Songs Cycled, by my guest Van Dyke Parks.
We took the car from Malibu, just like a star would want to do. Catching a flight up into the night, where no one despairs in dreaming of Paris. Was our first class the whole damn way? Le coup de grâce with creme brulee. Man, what a spread.
A little bit of the song Dreaming of Paris from the album Songs Cycled, the latest from the composer and lyricist, producer, singer, and arranger Van Dyke Parks, who's with me on soundcheck. So the political tenor of this song, as you were describing just a moment ago, is something that we hear echoes of in a lot of other songs, and perhaps most stated most baldly in a tune like Black Gold. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, how do you do that? How do you serve two masters, the message and the music, at the same time?
Well, this is why I think this, the song form is the most potent political tool in the kit. This is why I've turned to songs, what I love about them, and what makes such a small thing so epic. It, as Ted Turner said in his book title, it only looks easy. it's important to remember to entertain in a song, and I try to do that. But at the same time, I mean, I want a great velvet glove to protect the casual observer from the fist that I really intend to project, to bring urgency to some of these political issues. Black Gold is about the first major ecotastrophe off the Bay of Biscay, which tarred the face of three nations, France, Spain, and Portugal. Fishing villages were wiped out. Still, they've spent the money that was paid for them, the recompense for the damage that was done. But in fact, it was just a single-hulled oiler that dumped 80,000 metric tons of crude on the face of Europe. In 1969, ecology became my hue and my cry, when I started turning green, as it were. And it's pretty good to do so when you have the voice of a frog. But I think that it is the obligation of songwriters to incorporate those urgencies in their songs, but do it in as cosmetically appealing fashion as possible, if you remember that vinegar draws flies.
Right. Well, let's hear how Black Gold turned out from the album Songs Cycled, by my guest Van Dyke Parks.
I had seen the captain drinking. I don't know what he was thinking when he took that stinking cargo out. Without a doubt, he went too far, but he will take us out to sea. 80,000 metric tons of crude, a crew of 21. We're pounding through the ocean, just a jar of screws in motion. All the stars rotating in their canopies. Black gold rolling in the hold. Back and forth in time for every swell. Black gold, time would now unfold.
Black Gold is a song from my guest Van Dyke Parks from his new album called Songs Cycled. It's been 45 years since Song Cycle, his 1968 debut album. Lots of work in between. Beach Boys, Bonnie Raitt, Joanna Newsom, I mentioned earlier, but the list goes on and on and on. And your skill, Van Dyke, as an arranger, allows you to couch that fist of steel in a velvet glove. But I don't want to give people the wrong impression of this new record, that it's like some kind of political screed, you know?
I don't think there's anything of a scold in the record. I think the record is an absolute entertainment. In some ways, highly inventive and a novel, and certainly unique, but yet haunted by ghosts of prior protest singers, from whom I learned good lessons of what to do and what not to do.
So who would some of those ghosts be?
Well, it certainly would be Woody Guthrie. It would certainly be Phil Oakes, to me, whom I knew very well until his madness separated us.
Mm-hmm.
I produced his greatest hits. So, but I that recognizance, that social awareness, that's always in there. But there are songs that speak of love and small things, intimacies of an ordinary life, celebrating the ordinary human condition, hauntings of train whistle off in the distance and from our bungalow in Hollywood brought to mind the hobo, as did Orange Crate Art.
Mm-hmm. The album from 20 years ago.
And the California that I first saw in 1955 when I went there, with that decidedly frontier spirit.
You know, we use the term Americana to describe a lot of different types of sound, and that frontier kind of vision of California that you're talking about is part of it. But so is the sounds of other American ghosts, the singers of the American South in the early 1800s. You do an arrangement of one of those old shape notes songs from the book called The
Parting Hand.
Yeah.
That is from the Sacred Harp Society. You see, that's another thing that spares me from the indignities of being a creative personality. I am reacting to what it is. I'm writing what I know. This is Lit 101. Write what you know. And what I know is that we have left a great deal behind. And in the song form, I am making a conscious and sometimes unconscious decision, responding to that, of what to migrate forward. So certain language, I believe, deserves to be projectile, vomited into the future as part of our legacy, something that needs to be reinforced. And, you know, it's funny how a newspaper, a journalist will always ask you, well, what's new? You know, music journalists do it too. These the first new material. Well, I make a case for what's old.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that is a very important aspect of creativity. To remember that reverse is the most powerful gear in terms of torque in an automobile. Get in a car, you'll find that out. Reverse is very important, and much of my life is spent with a windshield. I believe my best work is ahead of me, but I still have the rear view in mind.
Well, I love this arrangement of The Parting Hand. People who know what shape note hymn singing sounds like, it, you know, that kind of rough-hewn communal sort of singing, we'll get a little bit of that, but then they'll get a surprisingly inventive, almost orchestral arrangement of this song from my guest Van Dyke Parks and his album Songs Cycled.
Makes me understand that we must take the part in hand.
How oft I've seen you throw in tears and heard you tell your hopes and fears.
An arrangement of The Parting Hand, a sacred harp tune in this traditional American 19th century style known as shape note singing. Van Dyke Parks' arrangement from his new album Songs Cycled. Did you grow up with that tradition? Was it still around when you were a kid?
Well, I was born into an unair-conditioned South. There was eye contact, and horizontal relationships were established.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, people talk to one another.
Oh, okay.
You had neighbors. You borrowed things from neighbors or gave freely. It wasn't just the progress of profit. Mm. It wasn't the dominance of the eroticism of wealth. It was something else entirely. It had to do with the struggles of a South trying to become something. And the hymns that I knew were Wesleyan hymns because my mother was a Methodist.
Mm.
And... So I loved low church hymns as much as high church experiences, such as being brought to New York to in 1955 to appear on the stage at Carnegie Hall. In those days, you couldn't buy a position on Carnegie Hall. You can now. But with Toscanini, worked in a boy choir.
Really?
So I had my experiences in music have been legitimate and totally illegitimate. And that's where I am today, a pariah in both worlds, but doing what I can to infuse people with an appreciation of what heat is on the street and how it should be brought to the elite.
Mm-hmm. So bringing that kind of classical sense of orchestration and form to popular music is something that you've done very effectively through the course of your career, perhaps most notably with the Beach Boys. And I'll ask about Smile. I know that's a long and convoluted story, but, you know, the record sitting on a shelf for however many years and then finally released in 2011. Did that sort of, I mean, that was kind of a formative experience for you in a way, wasn't it?
Well, not so much as producing Ry Cooder's first album or Randy Newman's first album. Those were formative because they defined me as a beta male who found a good place to be beta, with a successful and immediate returns.
Mm.
The inconvenience of the Beach Boy experience was that it was hanging like an albatross over my head. For 40 years.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it was celebrated. Well, for that and other reasons.
Well, other reasons being that there was some brilliant music and arranging done there, but you describe yourself as a beta male, which suggests that these projects needed an alpha male, which Ry Cooder, Randy Newman certainly are, but Brian Wilson doesn't strike me as that type.
Well,
maybe he was different then, but the Brian Wilson that I've met.
Yeah. No, absolutely. He was Brian at the time I met him was the single most powerful, that is most productive. We're talking about if you want to measure music in tonnage.
If you want to use, is that how we want to measure it?
That's not how I want to measure it, but that's how the head of Warner Brothers Records described good music. What is good music? He said, tonnage, my boy, tonnage. in terms of tonnage and sheer productivity and all of the various roles that it takes to be a singer, songwriter, group leader, head of a corporation,
right,
you know, hiring so many people, thinking about their health plans and so forth, those, all of those things were collided in great force on Brian Wilson, and he suffered a psychological collapse as a result of all that, and the heightened expectations which were raised by Sergeant Pepper coming out before Smile did.
Mm.
It was nice that I thought it was wonderful that Paul and John came to see us at the studio unannounced, but I was still delighted to meet them. It reminded me of Paul Revere's warning, "The British are coming." They finally did.
Did you know what was in the works when they stopped?
Yes,
by?
Yes, yeah. I did.
Fell in love years ago with an innocent girl from the Spanish and Indian home, home of the heroes and blue. Once at night, Katrina Square the fight, and she was right in the rain of the boats that eventually brought her down. But she's still dancing in the night, unafraid of what it do.
We're speaking with Van Dyke Parks. His newest album is called Songs Cycled, coming 45 years after his first solo album called Song Cycle, a long and very productive career. You have continued to kind of fuse the popular and the classical, and to my ears, of the many things you've done recently, the one that really struck me was your work with Joanna Newsom, the harpist, on her album East.
Well, she's absolutely brilliant, and that is she takes no regard for flattery or insult. She moves right ahead and true to herself, and it's that kind of courage that's evinced in her work that I seek in my own. I think courage, such courage, can be contagious. Now, it's not always easy to drag an audience along with you. That's happened to Joni Mitchell, I remember. Tom Waits has had trouble with it. Harry Nilsson certainly was destroyed by the expectations he had that his audience would come with him gaily into that night. But I think it's important to be true to yourself. Otherwise, you turn into you get the problem of which lie did I tell? Mm-hmm. And all of the work I do is highly personal, as what Joanna does. So I'm very happy with it. But to tell you the truth, all of it is, I feel, an equal devotion. It's all life-defining, and there's no job too small for me. I am not above anything. Recently, I got a call from a man by the name of Skrillex. I had no idea how to print. I did nothing, nothing about him. I said, "Where are you?" He said, "I'm in front of 350,000 people at a concert in Belgium." I said, "Did they come to see you?" He said, "Yes, Mr. Parks. Would you orchestrate something for me?" I said, "I will, if you send it out and I feel I could do it." "Yes, I will." He said, "Thank you, Mr. Parks. We will destroy the world." Well, Skrillex was playing for a constituency, those hundreds of thousands of disenfranchised European youth, unemployable, hungry, not of our world, not of this world we think of first. And I had a decision to make, and Yogi Berra would have approved. I came to the fork, and I made an analysis. Either I'm above this and I don't have to understand it, or I need to serve those people.
Hmm.
And I chose the latter and had one of the most exciting events as an arranger orchestrator. You know, the greatest thing that has happened to me in all of this brouhaha is with the infrequent albums I've put out, is that one moment I got a call from Ray Charles' manager in Paris. "Mr. Charles wants to hear your string reel." Well, it took me a moment to find out what a string reel is. But we sent it forth. He died within two
weeks.
That's
like a demo of your work?
Yes, to show what I'm capable of.
Yeah.
I got his attention. My wife and I started to sob. We were in the kitchen. It was just such a beautiful validation of who I would like to be and how I would like to serve.
We've been speaking with Van Dyke Parks, who has been serving music for close to half a century now. Van Dyke, it has been, in the words of another songwriter, a long, strange trip. But thank you so much for sharing some of it with us today.
I'm delighted to be here.
There is a rusty light on the pines tonight. Some corn wine, Lord Romero. Into the bones of the birches and the spires of the churches jutting out from the shadow.
That's a bit of the song Emily by Joanna Newsom, the arrangement by Van Dyke Parks. Up next, we hear about a new startup that's betting on a very old way of writing music. And later on the show, a live performance from guitarist Ben Verdery. This is Soundcheck. Every couple of months here on the show, we find ourselves talking about babies and music. We've learned how live music can help premature infants grow stronger, about mothers who make playlists for the delivery room, and about the vast array of commercially available compilations that claim to make your baby the next Mozart or Einstein. But never before have we talked about personalized music, written specifically for your baby. Until now. That's a little bit of a song called Rosie Grace, written for a baby named, yes, Rosie Grace. A new startup company called Pear Music is behind the song, and the co-founders are Ken Christensen and Cassandra Wynn. They're here with me in the studio. Hi, guys.
Hi. Thank you.
So, explain, Ken, the idea behind Pear Music.
Essentially, it's writing unique songs for babies.
So it's commissioned music.
It is, yeah. It didn't start out that way. It started off as a gift that I wrote a duet for a friend of mine having a baby. And so it was sort of a dedication at first.
Yeah. Now, Cassandra, there is a huge market of music for babies out there.
There is, but I actually haven't been able to find commissioned music for babies, which is what I thought was really sweet and really heartfelt about it.
So you're writing pieces commissioned by the parents for their infants.
That's correct.
How do you tailor a piece of music to a person who is still becoming a person?
Yeah.
can't really speak or express themselves in the usual way.
Yeah, so what we do is we ask the parent to provide us with a picture, video, words, anything that they feel their baby represents. And both of us have visual arts backgrounds. Mm-hmm. I was classically trained, but I also went to an art school, and it's something that I feel like I have a knack for is writing music to something visual and being inspired by something that is visual.
And it's called pair music, the French word for father. Why pair and not mare or
right.
mare pair
yeah.
or mom and dad? Or
right. yeah, well, it's sort of an homage to two of my classical music giant favorites, Papa Haydn, and then there's Père Franck, César Franck. We wanted a name that wasn't just like baby music. You know, we wanted something that was kind of sophisticated.
So 7-month-old at the time, 7-month-old Shilla Yoon, her parents said to you, she's like the, I mean, Cassandra, as you said, you know, I mean, I found this with my kids very early on. They have personalities. They may not be speaking, but you kind of know, this one's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
This one's going to be even more trouble.
Yeah.
So Shilla's parents...
Well, what happened was Shilla is the baby of a friend of mine, and she has been posting on Facebook and Instagram a lot, and so I kind of got to watch this baby develop. And I was like, let's just test this idea out. Try it for this baby. So we sent it to her, the mom, and she loved it. And we're like, okay, let's try this for more people now.
All right. So this was kind of a test piece.
The test, yeah.
Sort of, yeah. We consider her to be our spokes baby.
All right. Yeah. The pieces are named after the babies. So this work is simply called Shilla, an example of pair music. That's just a little bit of Shilla, written for 7-month-old Shilla Yoon by Ken Christensen, the violinist. He and Cassandra Wynn, who are both here with me on Soundcheck, are the co-founders of Pear Music, a company that writes for parents a customized piece of music inspired by their baby. So, Ken, that's three different tracks of you playing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that normally the way these pieces work, is that you'll kind of overdub the different parts?
Yeah, and that's how we see it for now. But, you know, it's also something that I hope this grows to the point where people are commissioning me to, you know, maybe do a quartet symphony, you know, let's go big.
But right now you're talking about like 2-3 minute pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
And Cassandra, it's not cheap. I mean, $900 to commission a work is in the scheme of, in the classical music world is pretty cheap. But you know, that's a pretty boutique gift.
Right. It takes into consideration the time spent of him writing and then recording the music.
Mm-hmm. And for $1,500, you get the piece and a music box, which then is like custom made to play that piece.
Right.
So, you know, are people buying the music boxes?
We've got some interest. I mean, I definitely have now two people that have, you know, we're in the middle of talking about what we want to do. So
now, and when you say you're in sort of discussion or conversation with parents, so you do what you do, like a rough draft of the piece, and then they get to weigh in and say, yeah, that's the right direction, or no, that's not my kid.
Yeah, yeah. That, so for one of the other pieces that we've done, I started off with a sketch that was about 30 seconds, 40 seconds long. Basically, it shows what the piece is eventually going to sound like.
So are people surprised, Cassandra, that this is not like clap-along, sing-along, mom and dad with the baby in the bath kind of music, but something very different?
No, I think that when you listen to the music, it just makes sense. Like, when you listen to Shilla, you can, for me, I just feel like I can see her. Or when I see Jackson, like, the music just makes sense. So I don't think it's surprising.
Well, it certainly is unusual.
Yeah,
you know?
unusual.
I mentioned before, there's a lot of baby music out there.
Yeah.
There's even a lot of baby classical music. You know, these compilations, Mozart for babies and stuff like that.
But I think, like, new classical, there's not a lot of new classical music. And that's something that Ken's work outside of Pear has dealt with a lot.
Mm-hmm. And so, Ken, is this aimed for the parents or for the kid?
Both.
Both.
And also, I mean, selfishly, me. not just from a business standpoint, but, and actually, that's very secondary, tertiary. I mean, it's, for me, it's, I see this as something that sort of adds to my catalog, I guess. You know, something that I don't see this enough, classical musicians just going through the motions of writing lots of music, and I hope that this is what happens with Pear for me.
Well, we'll wrap up by hearing a little bit of Ken's piece for Jackson. Ken Christensen is the violinist and composer. Cassandra Wynn, the other co-founder of Pear Music, a company that writes for parents a customized piece of music inspired by their baby. Ken, Cassandra, thank you both for being here.
Thank you very much.
This is Soundcheck. This week's Check Ahead on Soundcheck.org comes from the Indian-born vocalist Falu. Falu has made a name for herself by blending Hindustani classical music with pop, both on her own and with collaborators like Yo-Yo Ma, Philip Glass, and Wyclef Jean. Falu's upcoming solo record is called Foras Road. It's also the name of the road that runs through the oldest red light district in the city of Mumbai. The album is a journey of sorts through the music of India's brothels and the courtesans whose voices have been heard there for centuries. This song from the record is called Kumar.
Mari.
That's Kumar from the Indian-born vocalist Falu and her band. You can stream her new album all this week on our website, soundcheck.org. Up next, live music from the ever-excitable guitarist Ben Verdery. This is Soundcheck. Thank you. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. As a guitarist, composer, arranger, and teacher, Benjamin Verdery has made a big impact on the classical guitar world since he first appeared on the scene in the 1980s. This album from 1991 features Ben's arrangements of some of Jimi Hendrix's songs, alongside some contemporary classical fare. Now Ben is here, live in our Soundcheck studio, with songs by Prince and Randy Newman and some guy named Bach. Here's the prelude from the Bach Cello Suite No. 4. It's played on a specially made baritone guitar by Benjamin Verdery. That is Benjamin Verdery live on Soundcheck with the prelude from the Bach Cello Suite No. 4, played on, I'll call it, classical guitar. Ben, good to have you back with us.
Thank you. It's been a while. It's great to be here, man. Great to see you.
Folks who tuned in the middle and didn't hear the introductory remark about specially made baritone guitar might have been wondering, how low can that guitar go?
How low? Well, it's a fifth lower than the, quote, normal classical guitar.
Uh-huh.
And
so then how's it different from a bass guitar?
Well, bass, it's different from the bass guitar. And it's basically a classical guitar with six strings. And I'm assuming you mean bass guitar as in normal Fender
right,
bass.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So it's six strings. It's tuned just like a classical guitar. except it's a much bigger scale length. This is 72, so it's a lot of stretching for the old left hand, and the strings are much thicker and a lot more. So I've been, you know, it's a special set of strings. So it's really, it's equivalent, I guess, if you're a violinist and you move to the viola. It's sort of like somewhat that kind of a relationship, you know. But that having been said, it's a very different instrument. This is brand new. I mean, I've only had it for like, I don't know, I've been playing it for 2 months max. And I'm so excited, I know what to do. I just love it.
So is it a new invention?
No, I don't think it's a... well, you know, the history of the guitar, it never ceases to totally fascinate me.
And
when I say that, in reference to it, I mean that since guitar... since we brought up the violin, the difference is that a guitar maker will always make something for the guitarist, and the guitarist is never satisfied. So you, being a guitar aficionado and know so much about it, you've seen 7 strings, 8 strings.
Right.
What did I see the other day? A video of a guy on a 3-string guitar playing sort of Michael Hedges stuff. You know, so it's we're always messing. We're never satisfied. And there are... instances in ensembles and Baroque ensembles, and you know that there were, for instance, we know of guitarists that are up a fifth, and that's been done through a history. So it's kind of always been like this.
So it's not like violinists and cellists with their Strads and their Guarneris, where it's kind of a fixed instrument, and you know what it's going to be.
Right.
The guitar over the course of the same period of time has really evolved a lot.
It has, and. In fact, the guitar that I'll play next has evolved in terms of the design of it. It's completely a new design. Greg Smallman redefined the way guitar is made inside. It's got a lattice bracing as opposed to this, which is fan bracing. It has carbon fiber in it. So, and that was 30 years ago, you know, that he sort of came onto the scene.
So another difference with string players, because they all want the Italian instruments from 300 years ago. Guitarists...
Right.
You want the makers.
We want the
who
latest kid
living.
On the block. Yeah, yeah, we want the loud. You know, and I think the fact that, you know, maybe the fact that it is a flat top and that doesn't last as long as a violin. You know, the fact of the although that's being contested. So we're never satisfied. I mean, you know, I mean, what can I say? And it's also very exciting. I mean, because you're in an age where there are so many great guitar makers. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, and
but I should say this is made by Otto Volwinkel from Holland, and you can see, John, that's got the little like from the he tries to make it like the houses in Holland, you know, with his headstock.
You mean at the very top of the
instrument? Yeah,
it's supposed to look like the roof of
that's
a Dutch
right.
house.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, we're speaking with Ben Verdery, the guitarist. He's performing at the 92nd Street Y on Thursday, May 23rd, a 7:30 concert that will be typically eclectic, Bach and Albéniz and other classical composers, but also Elvis Presley and Prince and Randy Newman. Now, you have never stuck to just the classical tradition.
Uh-huh.
Do you see yourself on a... Are you like the Blues Brothers? Are you on a mission from God?
I am. No, I'll tell you what happened was, you know, when I started playing classical guitar pretty early in... you know, I noticed that so many classical guitarists were playing arrangements of folk tunes from mostly Latin America, Spain, and that's really what they were. They were gorgeous. I love them. But I said, wait a minute, I have my, and it was in Spain. I remember I had this epiphany in Spain where you know, I was in Cordoba being John Williams' teaching assistant and with Paco Peña. And
great
this,
flamenco guitarist.
My brother, yes. And I should say brothers. And so... I looked around. I said, look at all of these people. They're so involved with their music from their homeland. I don't play music from my homeland. I'm not from South America. I'm not from Spain. I'm from America. And we have some pretty great musicians here. Why don't I just play music that I grew up with in my own fashion, in my own way?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what began this wonderful journey of arranging, you know, these tunes of musicians that I really love. And no, I mean, I know them. You know, I mean, I know how they sort of think in a way, to a degree.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Now, yesterday on the show, Tom Jones was here and was talking about Kiss, the Prince song that he recorded with Art of Noise. And we were sort of, you know, looking back at years past when we had a Soundcheck Smackdown, one of our debates.
Oh, yeah,
about
I know it well, yes.
The, whether it was, which is better, the Tom Jones version of
right.
Kiss or the Prince original. You have now got a third contender.
Well, I love Tom Jones and, of course, worship Prince, you know. Yes, do you want me to get right to it?
Sure.
Oh, you want me? Okay, here we
yeah,
go.
Yeah, why don't we? This is Ben Verderi's arrangement and live performance on Soundcheck of Prince's song Kiss. Due to rights issues, we are unable to podcast this performance from today's show, but the good news, you can stream the entire performance and interview at soundcheck.org. Well, it was a lovely song to begin with, and that's a lovely arrangement of it. By...
Thanks so much. First time I've played it for any humans.
Really?
Yeah, it's yeah. the first time, yeah.
Randy Newman's In Germany Before the War, Ben Verderi playing live on Soundcheck. Let me just go back to the Kiss arrangement
sure,
by Prince
sure.
for a second. You were doing something at the beginning that
right.
kind of had like a prepared guitar sound. What...
Yeah, well, you know, he does have a lot of melody in that song. You
yeah,
know?
Just, yeah.
You know, so I thought... But I was so hooked. I mean, the basic reason I did that tune is I just wanted to do this. You know what I mean? As a classical guitarist, you want to do that. You know what I mean? At least I do. So I think, well, I'll have to. And then you know, generally when I make these arrangements, I write out all the parts, and it's a little bit like a collage, and I kind mm-hmm. of add my own. But then I said, well, what are you going to do? You got this killer, you know. And then I said, well, I'll have the harmonics with it. Sort of the rhythm there.
Right.
But what am I going to do? And then I remembered, oh, yeah, it's an old, basically, Tarraga did it, who's a, you know, 19th century
Spanish
guitarist.
Guitar yeah. composer.
But
yeah.
I added the fact you take one string, you bend it over another, and then he just did it as a, he used to do it as a percussive thing.
It gives you a snare drum effect. Yeah.
But then I said, no, we can move, and we could bend it over another, and then if you play them both...
So you've bent one string over,
over
the
other. And yeah. then you bend them and play them together, and you get yourself sort of... I know Prince sounds better than that if he's listening. I do think it's... But that's the best I could do for that sort of non-melody.
Now, Ben, you have, since 1985, been the chair of Yale's guitar department.
Right, right.
Have you seen a big change in the kids as they come in? I mean, in 85, would guitar students have blanched at the idea of playing Hendrix or Prince?
A little bit. I mean, you know, I must say I've had some... I'm so lucky to be there. So, you know, the students basically teach me. And, you know, so... but basically, I've seen a change in... Well, given that they have such a great composition department, I mean, you know, at my concert, I'm going to play a great new piece by Ezra Latterman. But, you know, Martin's there and David Lang and Aaron
Kern. Martin Bresnik.
And I think
David
that
Lang.
Though that is an, all of their ideas, the composition department has affected the guitarist tremendously mm-hmm. since most guitarists like to play new music. So I am seeing like more electric guitar playing, people playing more, you know, taking an interest in that, more commissioning of their friends.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I would say, and I would say that, you know, and of course the level is so high now. I mean, young guitar players just is staggering. I'm still,
yeah.
okay, you know, that's what they're teaching me, you know. So, but that I would say in the sense of opening up, yes. And yet that having been said, you'd be surprised at how many people, especially now, they're really into the Segovia repertoire. They want to play Tedesco and Ponce, and I mean, it's shocking, shocking.
Well, it was great stuff back then, and it still is now.
So it's a real array, you know, and also that they're all so different, you know.
Right.
Like you have a guy like, well, I don't want to name drop some of my former students, but you know they go
oh,
on
you're dying. To
oh
name
yeah, yeah,
drop
yeah.
One
yeah.
of them, aren't
well,
you?
Then there's Bryce Dessner and Dominic Frasca, and
right.
you know who go their own path, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and James Moore is another one who's doing great stuff with Dither Quartet. So yeah.
All right. Now, Ben, we've heard the guitar. We heard the baritone guitar. You've done some work with electric guitar with Andy Summers,
yes.
formerly of the Police.
Yes.
We're going to wrap up with a piece that Ingram Marshall wrote for you.
Oh,
he wrote a piece
hero.
For you and for Andy Summers.
Yes, he did. He wrote a concerto for us. And you, yeah, we right.
Both classical
yeah.
and electric guitars. And this piece called Sopa, this is like a Tibetan title.
Well, it's only
or
the
something.
Name is taken from the Tibetan word meaning patience. And so in that sense, but it's typical Ingram using digital delay And I think, you know, frankly, it's one of the greatest guitar pieces out there. You know, I think, you know, and I'm such a fan of Ingram, you know, he knows it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm honored that he wrote this piece. And it's funny you should play because I recently just got it back in the repertoire. And I'll be playing it next year here in New York as well.
Okay. Ben Verdery's concert is Thursday, May 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the 92nd Street Y, from Albanith to Elvis. It is a typically eclectic program. Ben, always great to see you. Thanks
great
for dropping
to see
by.
I'm honored to be here. Thanks so much.
Here's Ben's performance of this music by Ingram Marshall. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow at 2 p.m. on soundcheck.org, we'll be streaming a live session with the Tony Award-winning actress and soprano Audra McDonald. You might know her from her roles on the ABC program Private Practice, or on Broadway from the recent revival of Porgy and Bess. She's got a brand new album called Go Back Home, and she'll join us to sing some of it for us. That's 2 p.m. tomorrow, live at soundcheck.org. Tomorrow night at 9, the best-selling author of The Kite Runner and A Thousand Splendid Sons, Khaled Hosseini, joins us to share some of his favorite tracks by the late Afghan pop icon Ahmad Zahir. Plus, the singer-songwriter Angel Olsen brings her powerful voice to our studio for a live set. Soundcheck wants you to join us in the Green Space on May 29th. It's the actual date of the 100th anniversary of Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, and pianist Vicky Chow of the Bang on a Can All-Stars will perform a solo piano version of the work. It's May 29th, 7 p.m. For tickets, go to thegreenspace.org. That does it for tonight's show. I'm John Schaefer. See you back here tomorrow at 9. Until then, check us out online at soundcheck.org.